first president, Joe Biden, spoke today shortly after being sworn in by Supreme Court Chief Justice John Roberts as the 46th president of the United States.
This is America's day. This is democracy's day. A day of history and hope, of renewal and resolve. Through a crucible for the ages, America has been tested anew, and America has risen to the challenge. Today, we celebrate the triumph not of a candidate, but of a cause, the cause of democracy. The people, the will of the people has been heard, and the will of the people has been heeded. We've learned again that democracy is precious, democracy is fragile. And at this hour, my friends, democracy has prevailed.
Biden spoke from the west front of the U.S. Capitol building. It's the week in Washington. We're looking at the inauguration as well as changes in political power in the U.S. Senate and day one objectives for President Biden. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Did you watch today's inauguration? What stood out to you? Did you have a moment that struck you in particular? If you didn't watch, are you planning to come back and watch later? Whether you voted for or against Biden, what were you thinking while watching it? And what do you want to see as day one priorities for the new administration? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. Craig Gilbert is a political reporter and Washington bureau chief for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and JS Online. Craig, welcome back to Central Time.
It's great to be with you.
Now, Craig, I understand you've attended many inaugurations. This one was a harder ticket between the pandemic and all the security precautions, but you were watching it. How did what you saw today compare to years past?
Yeah, I think I've been to every inauguration since the Clinton presidency in person. I did not go to this one in person because of the pandemic and because of all the security issues. It's always a really kind of treasured event. And it's great to be there. It's great to see it up close. This one, obviously, with a unique backdrop and, you know, what we take for granted about this ritual, we didn't take for granted this time. I mean, that was really the subtext of everything that happened today, was that, you know, this was not a normal ritual, you know, unexceptional transfer of power. And everything unfolded, obviously, against the broader backdrop of the pandemic, but against the particular backdrop of the storming of the Capitol. And so that really, I think, framed the event for Joe Biden and really the overriding theme of his inaugural, which was healing and unity and, you know, kind of repairing what the country has been through.
Is that a message that you think is going to be heard by Republicans and Democrats, for that matter, in Congress? Do you think that obviously they want to grant everything? Do you see room there for unity and compromise after what we saw, especially on January 6th?
Well, I mean, on paper, it's a message that is appealing for a lot of Republicans. For one thing, they're in the minority, so they're out of power. They're hoping and appealing to Democrats to sort of, quote, put their money where their mouth is and work with them because the Democrats hold the power. Now, it's not a big margin of power, particularly in the Senate, but you know, there's going to be this tension and this discussion and debate going forward in this presidency over, you know, from the Republican perspective, over whether Democrats are, are sincere about working together. And there's also going to be, I think, you know, for Democrats, they're going to be sitting back and watching to see whether Republicans are sincere about being a constructive minority party. This is all so different from the ethos of what happened 4 years ago. I mean, 4 years ago, Donald Trump did talk about healing and he did talk about unity, but tonally it was very different. And, these are two very different people, but also the context is entirely different.
Wisconsin's congressional delegations, past and present. Some of them were at the event. Some have been commenting. Former House Speaker Paul Ryan of Wisconsin was at the inauguration. Reporters quoted him saying, quote, our institutions were tested this year and our institutions passed the test. And he also said, quote, Joe Biden is legitimately elected president of the United States, and I'm here to honor this process. Now, talk about a statement that we might usually take for granted in a normal presidential transition, Craig. A Republican, a prominent Republican, just saying that Joe Biden is legitimately elected president is actually significant.
Yeah, I mean, it feels silly in some respects to sort of treat that like a news event, because, like you said, it would be unexceptional in normal times for the party, for people in the losing party just to sort of acknowledge that they lost an election and it was a legitimate election. But with the president, you know, kind of baselessly and repetitively claiming the election was stolen, you know, it put people in his party had to decide whether to kind of echo those sentiments or whether to push back against them or whether just to remain silent. And we saw people take all three of those tacks within the Republican Party. Paul Ryan, you know, a traditional Republican, former speaker, you know, not just today, but also a couple of weeks ago, you know, was on record as saying, you know, as opposing the effort to overturn the election and acknowledging the legitimacy of the election, as have some other Republicans, but not all Republicans.
Talking to Craig Gilbert from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, looking at today's inauguration and other big related news in national politics. You could join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts and reactions to today's inaugural event, with your hopes or fears for the coming days, the first days of the Biden administration. What kind of policies do you want to see focused on? Are there things where you think Democrats and Republicans can come together in the White House and Congress to get things done? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. That's 800-642-1234. Turning to Congress now, Craig, we saw some other swearings in, two now Democratic senators from Georgia and a Democratic senator from California to replace Vice President Kamala Harris. So now there's this power shift, 50-50 with the vice president as the tiebreaker. At a practical level, 50 votes plus a tiebreaker isn't enough to do everything you want to do in a Senate. What does it allow Democrats to do?
Well, there are some things the Senate can pass with a simple majority and some things that require a veto-proof majority, which is two-thirds or 67 senators. So, you know, budget bills or things that are construed as budget bills typically take just a simple majority, and some appointments take a simple majority. But a lot of legislation requires two-thirds approval, and so there are obviously real limits on what Democrats can do in both chambers, because their margin in the House, which doesn't have the filibuster, is pretty narrow. And so, you know, there are some House Democrats that represent districts that were carried by Donald Trump. Wisconsin has one of them, Ron Kind. I think there are only about a dozen Democrats that fit that description, but his district voted for Trump twice, and he's sort of styles himself as a centrist Democrat. So someone like Ron Kind may not be in exactly the same place on some issues as Wisconsin's other two Democratic House members, Mark Pocan of Madison and Gwen Moore of Milwaukee. And in the Senate, again, 50-50 deciding vote cast by the vice president. But, you know, those 50 Democratic senators include, you know, most notably Joe Manchin of West Virginia, a state that overwhelmingly voted for Donald Trump, and a few other Democrats that that are, you know, are more moderate members of the party and whose states are more purple. And we may find on some issues that they kind of act in league with, you know, a handful of moderate Republicans to try to take the initiative on some issues.
We're talking about the top stories in national politics, the inauguration, and the days ahead for the Biden administration and the new look in Congress. Craig Gilbert stays with us from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. It's the week in Washington. And you can join in at 800-642-1234 if you'd like. Looking for your thoughts and reactions to the inauguration events today. What stood out to you? Were there moments that you thought were particularly significant? And now that the ceremonies are about done, what are you looking for from a Biden presidency and from Congress? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 with your thoughts, questions, and reactions. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our Week in Washington talk with Craig Gilbert from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, looking at today's inauguration and what comes next. You can join in with your thoughts and questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Did you watch? What stood out to you? One thing that stood out to a lot of people, not usually, I think, the highlight of these events, the poem, a performance from the youngest poet ever to read at an inauguration. Here's a listen to 22-year-old Amanda Gorman from Los Angeles.
When day comes, we ask ourselves, where can we find light in this never-ending shade? The loss we carry, a sea we must wade. We've braved the belly of the beast. We've learned that quiet isn't always peace. In the norms and notions of what just is, isn't always just is. And yet the dawn is ours before we knew it. Somehow we do it. Somehow we've weathered and witnessed a nation that isn't broken, but simply unfinished. We, the successors of a country and a time where a skinny black girl descended from slaves and raised by a single mother can dream of becoming president, only to find herself reciting for one.
Craig, again, you've seen some inaugurations. Did this this poem stand out to you in ways maybe that past ones haven't?
Yeah, it did. Again, I think a lot of the power of this inaugural comes from what, you know, the events we've all been living through. And this poem obviously was in many ways a product of what happened on January 6th. And I think it was powerful and it was hopeful. And it was the spirit and tone of the poem was, you know, everything, all the conflict and challenges that we've been living through and contending, and the notion that, you know, there is still progress to be made and progress can be made. And it was hopeful and it was lyrical, I think. So the poem did stand out. The inaugural address, you know, Joe Biden is not, you know, considered the greatest orator in politics. But I do think, you know, there were some striking themes in there. And I think, you know, he did a good job of articulating and conveying the theme of, I mean, not just sort of unity and healing, but also the, you know, the political, taking on the political culture. I mean, the idea that, you know, people, we have to learn how to put ourselves in each other's shoes and see things from each other's perspective. The line that stood out to me was, politics doesn't have to be a raging fire destroying everything in its path. And I think that is something that has become truly dismaying to a lot of people in politics, and a lot of Americans, is just this idea that politics has become, you know, total war. And that stood out, and his appeal to his defense of truth and his appeal to facts stood out. So it was, I think, you know, a lot of really notable elements in what sometimes is an unremarkable event, like I said. I think a memorable one.
Let's go to our callers now at 800-642-1234. Mary Beth is with us in New Berlin. Mary Beth, hi.
Hello. What I'd like from this new administration is to see a lot of work get done and very quietly.
Mary Beth, thanks a lot for bringing that up. President Trump, like him or not, he definitely liked to see himself in headlines, had a knack for getting himself there. It seemed to work for him, obviously, in the 2016 election. I've seen some people hoping to not see the U.S. president president's name in the headlines quite so often, Craig.
Yeah, so we've already seen, you know, the contrast between the launching of President Biden's Twitter feed and, you know, President Trump's Twitter feed the last 4 years, you know, which was, you know, exclamation marks and caps and pretty provocative. And Joe Biden's first tweet really, I think, struck that tone that the listener was referring to, which is, you know, we got a lot of work to do and no time to waste and not a lot of drama and not a lot of caps and exclamation marks. So I think there's really, you know, there's such a clear stylistic difference between Donald Trump and pretty much every other president. But I think we're seeing a stylistic difference between, you know, in sort of how Joe Biden, the tone that Joe Biden is trying to strike, and maybe even the tone and style that other Democrats who might have won the nomination, you know, would have been striking at this moment.
Thanks for that call. We'll go to Katie now in Green Bay. Katie, hello.
Hi. So I just feel, want to say, I feel such a great, profound sense of relief. And I appreciated Biden's calls for unity. But I think we need to realize that for many people in this country, these 4 years just haven't been about an administration that we disagree with. This is a person who is abusive, who name calls, who terrified, who caused, you know, death. And so to move on from an abusive situation doesn't mean to forget and pretend it didn't happen. You know, we need to name. And I think that Joe Biden did that. He called out the lies. He called out the white supremacy. So I think as we move forward, we need to remember this isn't just about the differences of opinions. But Donald Trump is an abuser, and he abused this nation for a long time. And that's a different kind of healing.
Katie, thanks for the call. And that reminds me of a big topic we haven't talked about yet, Craig. Speaking of the issue of accountability, impeachment. The impeachment still is sitting there. The Senate trial still awaits at an as yet undetermined date. What are you watching for with that?
Well, so, yes. I mean, will they proceed? Presumably, we think they will. When will they proceed? Will there be new information coming to light that could influence the actions of the Senate? Will proceeding with an impeachment trial, will it, you know, conflict in any way with, you know, the business of the Biden administration? What one caller talked about, you know, getting a lot of work done and getting it done quietly. I mean, these are all kind of judgments. Some of them are tactical, but some of them are pretty significant that the Biden administration and Democrats in Congress will have to make. And then if it comes to it, you know, Republicans in the Senate will have to make their own judgments. Mitch McConnell has sort of signaled that he's not shut the door on voting to convict. Some other Republican senators likewise. And so Republicans will have their own decisions to make about how to handle that.
Thanks for that call. We're talking to Craig Gilbert from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, looking at today's inauguration and the first steps for the Biden administration. Back to your calls now. Norm is with us in Oneida County. Hi, Norm.
Yeah, hello. My concern is for the environment. The Trump administration opened up the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge in Alaska for oil drilling, and they also opened up the Tongass National Forest for mining and logging. And I'm very concerned about the environment. I'm wondering if Biden can overrule these things that Trump has done.
Norm, thanks a lot for that call. Some of those things that Norm is referring to done by various forms of presidential executive action. What are you watching for on environmental issues with Biden using the same kind of powers, Craig?
Well, President Biden has already indicated that he's going to, you know, rejoin the Paris Climate Accord, and so he's, you know, and along with that, we're going to see executive actions to roll back. I mean, there will be executive orders flying out of that office starting today to roll back Trump orders on a whole bunch of different fronts, but certainly on the environment, along with, you know, immigration and the pandemic and other areas. So, yeah, I mean, one of the things you can do as president, even with a very closely divided Congress, is you can undo some of the things your predecessor did by executive fiat. You can't undo everything, but you can you can undo a lot. And then there will be other things that he'll have to try to accomplish legislatively.
Thanks for the call, Norm. Craig, in our last minute or so, what are you most curious to see what's going to happen next?
Well, I mean, I you mentioned one of them, which is, of course, you know, what happens with an impeachment trial in the Senate. I think that really truly is a wild card. You know, we're going to go through a period where we have the Senate has to affirm cabinet nominees, and we don't know whether some of those will turn out to be roadblocks or not. How the Senate functions 50-50 and what the role that, you know, I mentioned this before, but what the role that some of the more moderate Democrats and Republicans play in this. And also, you know, in a broader sense, politically, there's just sort of the whole question about how the Republican Party moves forward post-Trump and to what extent it continues to be sort of a, you know, in the thrall of Trump and to what extent Republicans, you know, try to put Trump in the rearview mirror.
We'll leave it there for now. Craig, thanks a lot for joining us again.
My pleasure.
Craig Gilbert is a political reporter and Washington bureau chief for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. You can follow his work at JS Online. We talked to him today for our Week in Washington, looking at today's presidential and vice presidential inauguration, as well as Biden's first day in office and changes in the U.S. Senate.